From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The first issue of American Gardener, the newly redesigned member magazine of the American Horticultural Society, arrived recently, and in it are lots of good reads, including an article by today's guest, Nancy Lawson, a.k.a. The Humane Gardener. She writes about the folly and hazard of falling prey to the promises of those mosquito control services you're probably seeing advertised about now, and where mosquitoes fit into the bigger environmental picture anyhow. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Nancy Lawson, whom you may know as The Humane Gardener, the title of one of her books, is a naturalist and habitat consultant based in Maryland. Nancy promotes animal-friendly planting strategies and challenges us to sharpen our awareness that we're not alone out there, but actually just one part of a much bigger picture. Nancy's more recent book is called Wildscape, and I'm glad to welcome her back to the show today. Nancy, it's always so good to talk to you. How are you?
You too, Margaret. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
Okay. You know, a little rainy and a little crazy spring, but okay. Before we get started, I'll just say that I think we'll do a book giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com of your Wildscape book, which I enjoyed so much and we've talked about before on the show.
Thank you.
And I was glad to see what you wrote about in the first of the revamped issues of the American Horticultural Society's magazine. So that was great to see that they would do that type of a topic, because all of these gotta kill the insect advertising pitches make me a little crazy, I guess, because my name is Roach, huh? but I love the lead of your story, where you quote some of the advertising campaigns, you know, for like mosquito fogging services and stuff that have slogans like, outside is fun again, the only good mosquito is a dead one, you say. And then the one, kids love butterflies, not ticks and mosquitoes, battle back to protect your family and pets, you know. So what do we think of all that kind of?
and that last one, that really got me, because there's a picture with it of two kids, like toddler age, looking with a looking glass into a jar, and there's like a blue morpho butterfly photoshopped in. The whole thing is photoshopped, and it's showing these children just enraptured by insects, and then, you know, that don't even occur here,
right?
And then, yeah. So it's all kind of a mirage, you know, from start to finish, in terms of how they market these services and make people feel comfortable and safe. And even people who are concerned about local ecologies oftentimes don't realize, because they see these companies as the authority, you know.
Right. And I mean, this came up for me with some readers asked me, you know, about tick services, you know, oh, we're having this applied to our yard because it's going to, you know, get rid of all the ticks. And, mm-hmm. you know, and there's ones with ants and spiders, and there's, you know, it's like, oh my goodness. I mean, there's so many, and these claims, one is more fantastical than another. And a lot of that is based on the fact that they talk about the products that they're going to use being, quote, natural.
Exactly.
And then also, but that what they don't talk about is that they're not selective, yes, that they're not just aimed at one species.
Exactly. And I mean, so, and they really hype up that their product is, they say it's pyrethrins, which is the chrysanthemum derived, Which is also very harmful to, a broad spec. It's a broad spectrum insecticide anyway, even though it's
Yes.
natural. But usually they're not even using that. They're using the synthetically produced version of that, which are pyrethroids, and they're structurally just much more toxic and longer lasting. So they're marketed to last weeks at a time, up to 3 weeks, and. So, those companies will say, well, we're only targeting vegetation where the insects are. We're only spraying when the bees are not out, like it's, early in the morning or late in the day or something like that. But as we know, I mean, so first of all, there's tons of nocturnal insects, crepuscular insects. I mean, there's lots of insects during the day that are nocturnal that are roosting in the same vegetation that mosquitoes do, like fireflies.
Right.
And when I interviewed Aaron Anderson at the Xerces Society for that article, he gave the really good example of a leafcutter bee. Who's going to one of those treated areas to cut a piece of a redbud or a piece of a Virginia creeper or a rose or, some of these plants that they love, and taking it back with them to their nest. So it's not only potentially harming the adult, but also the larvae,
Right.
because there's still that chemical on that leaf for potentially weeks at a time.
So this
So.
residual effect of these pyrethroids, it can be, they can kill bees, butterfly caterpillars, fireflies, many other insects. And I believe there's also some research evidence about potential human impact, so it's not like these are something that's good for everybody, all living creatures.
Yeah,
But yeah, but
exactly.
this indiscriminate with the fogging, and they talk about mosquito fogging and so forth. I was fascinated in your article to see that there's like 1,200 species of mosquitoes. So a mosquito isn't a mosquito isn't a mosquito. It's not like a one creature, and that only what, like, I think you said 12 of them are the ones, of all those 200 are the ones that there may be disease issues with. So a lot of mosquitoes we don't have harm from, and also any serious harm other than an itchy bite maybe, but also they're plentiful, and they're incredibly important in the food chain for a lot of animals, of other insects. But I think, especially of birds and so forth, yes. Who eats mosquitoes? I think, yeah.
And so there's 3,500 worldwide, and then there's 200 in the US and
Yeah.
outlying territories, and only 12 are considered, around 12 are considered to be disease
Yeah.
vectors. And so many other ones, they might be quote unquote nuisances to us, but they're not actually harming us, but they are feeding, all of the mosquitoes are feeding, birds, bats, frogs,
Right.
dragonflies, especially
Right. That's what I was
damselflies.
trying to remember. Dragonflies, of course, of course.
Yeah, and the what I found really fascinating, when I wrote this piece was the Boulder example in Boulder,
Boulder, Colorado.
Colorado,
Oh, yeah.
of what they're doing. And they found that the damselflies and dragonflies have really just a huge role in mosquito control at their sites that they monitor. And they had a West Nile outbreak in the early 2000s in that region, and they since then have this really comprehensive program in the city of Boulder, but they do not spray any adulticide. So they're not spraying, they're not targeting adult mosquitoes, because really that doesn't get at the source of the problem.
And it's
And
so costly in other ways,
so costly in other
environmentally.
ways.
Right,
Right.
right.
And so they are monitoring, they have like 19 traps around the city, and then they have 300 wetlands that they monitor, and they'll monitor for a certain threshold of risk. So if as long as the number of infected mosquitoes stays below that threshold, there's a very low risk of transmission to humans. And so they just spot treat, but very, very judiciously with BTI, and that's that bacterial larvicide, which a lot of people will know about. But they spot treat that. They spot treat the larvae with that, and when they find that there's an area that maybe there aren't enough predators present, there isn't enough biodiversity present, and there are, I think it was like 10 or more mosquito. Culex mosquito larvae in a sample, and Culex, the two species in that area that cause disease are two Culex in the Culex genus. And so if they find 10 or more or something in a little sample, then they'll use that some granules of BTI. But what they found is that surrounding communities that spray actually go way, like sometimes many orders of magnitude above the threshold for risk to humans. And they're actually spraying adulticides all the time, and so they're working on, when I talked to them, they were working on putting together their data to do a paper on this. And but
Right.
their thought was that for the, there were two reasons that the not spraying kept around all these other mosquitoes that don't carry disease and that were good competition for the two disease-carrying species. So they take up egg-laying sites, and they also are, eating algae as larvae and microorganisms and stuff, and they're competing basically in the same niche for space and resources. And when you take them all away, then that means that those Culex species can come in and proliferate, and also a lot of those Culex species are more resistant to the adulticides, and so that's another issue with spraying, is that you're fostering.
There was a line in your article, I think it said it can take a million droplets of insecticide just to reach one mosquito.
Yeah, that was a Cornell study. And right, so what else, where are all those other droplets going,
Well, we know they're killing lots of other things,
Yeah.
and again, the residual effect, for weeks afterward and so forth. And
Right.
again, important to remember, this, folks, is a food chain. And so again, I
Exactly.
don't love a mosquito bite. It's irritating, and I want to swat at them too, when it comes at me or whatever. But if you're going to sit on the patio and have supper, put a fan out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's try to think of other things that we can do to manage some of these situations, rather than assume and buy into the baloney, really, that there's
Yeah.
some kind of like cure-all, like, hey, don't worry about mosquitoes, just pass the money to do this. And I'm sorry to sound, full of disdain for some of these promises of some of these programs, but I feel that way because it causes a lot of other harm, and
Yes.
that's what's never revealed in the sales pitch, that this other harm is going to cascade down from this action that you're taking. And the consumer doesn't understand that, and I think a lot of the consumers, if they did understand that, would maybe try a different approach. And that's why we're talking about it today, about, this is not something that I don't think people know,
I
that,
think, yeah.
the advertising promise sounds good, right?
Right. And there are people who will say, who will push back on the idea that, because it's true, like there's, it's not as, it's birds and bats alone aren't taking care of mosquitoes. They eat mosquitoes, but they eat a lot of other things too. But it's the whole collection of our wild neighbors out there
Right.
doing the job. And animals like dragonflies and damselflies are eating a lot of mosquitoes. They're also feeding the birds, and so you're affecting. That was another thing in the Boulder research, is that in areas where you're taking away so many of those dragonflies and damselflies by taking away their food, their mosquito prey, then you're also taking birds away because the dragonflies and damselflies are in turn bird prey.
Right.
And so you're reducing all the way up the chain. The biodiversity and the many layers of ecological health.
Yeah. And there are things that we can do within our own little habitat, so to speak, like, I mean, and I know people have heard this before and it sounds maybe tiresome, but it really does make a difference. Standing water, even a very small amount, is, is a problem and is a place where this reproduction activity can happen. So you're inviting more mosquitoes, if you leave an inch of water in a bucket or whatever, or again, puddles and things like that. And even if you don't rinse your bird bath, that water can become a place where they reproduce, and so we can make a difference in our own immediate surrounding. I have water gardens, two water gardens that I've had for more than 30 years, in-ground water gardens, and I have in seasonal troughs of big troughs of water that I put out kind of as, container gardens, so to speak, but they're water. And people always, when they come to do garden visits here, they're always, oh, you must have terrible mosquitoes, and I'm like, no, I can't remember the last time I got a mosquito bite. Now one thing is I'm an upland site. I'm on a hill. I'm not a lowland site, so I don't have a lot of large amounts of standing water and things like that. But I do have water, and I am in an area where it rains a fair amount and so forth. So, I attribute it to the fact that I also have tons of frogs and tons of birds, and I mean, because I invite them all in with other approaches to sort of habitat style gardening for all these decades. And I think they all help, right? They're the helper creatures, because again,
They
it's a
do.
food chain.
Yeah.
So what
I get
else
the
should,
same comments. I get the same comments. And I 1 year in the fall, I noticed in like October, I got a few bites. And I realized it was, I think, because the dragonflies were leaving and some of the birds were migrating,
What so what so so standing water and like cleaning our bird baths, not letting water puddle and pool and be in things like containers here and there and so forth. It's just standing. What else can we do? I mean, I know a lot of people talk about making sort of a bucket trap, and even Doug Tallamy recommends sometimes making a bucket trap with like halfway f filled with water and some straw in
And
it
some
and so forth.
straw.
How does it,
And then that's a place where mosquitoes are going to want to lay eggs. And so it's, nice and stagnant. And so a lot of people, they will put the BTI dunks in there. So I asked this.
it's like it looks like a big tablet, like a giant aspirin or whatever, but it's a BT. It's of this natural insecticide, so to speak, this biologic.
And so I asked the Xerces Society about it because I've always had a concern about that because people will also put it in ponds, they'll put it in bird baths, and is it really safe for everybody but mosquitoes? Like, how can that be? So I did ask Doug a couple of years ago because I'm involved with our local bee city, Howard County Bee City in Maryland, and we were putting together, or we were talking about putting together bucket kits, and I had a concern about that. And Doug said that because I had read that midges could be affected, and they're really, good bird food and stuff, and he said, well, they wouldn't be affected probably because they lay eggs in mud in the bottom of marshes and
I
ponds,
see.
and so. But then, when I talked to the Xerces Society just recently, they said they just recommend that people instead just do the bucket, just put some straw or some grass in there and some water, and dump it periodically, like every few days. And don't use the BTI because we don't know the effect of BTI on the soil and on the organisms in the soil. And also, it does harm other, like crane flies and as far as people putting it in ponds and such, I mean, I mean, there's a certain amount of tolerance that we want to have too. There's been impact shown on dragonfly and damselfly larvae, but it's thought to be because they're being deprived of their mosquito prey when BTI is used. So I think it's one of those things on a spectrum where,
Right. If we don't need it, we could leave it off the to-do list. And again, if the bucket becomes this kind of funky place with a little water in it, and they're attracted to just the straw and the water, and you dump that every few days, like you're saying, then the so to speak, eggs never hatch, you know, never gets is left there long enough for successful reproduction. So and you skip the BTI. So good. So that less is more, right? I mean, that's better, safer. Yeah. I think so, but I do think a lot of us probably have, you know, mosquito places where they would like to be, like a little bit of water here and there, you know, because you know, it rains and you forget there's that, you know, your weed bucket that you left out in the wherever next to the compost heap, right? And it has an inch of water. I mean, do you know what I mean? It's you, and those are the things, and that can contribute to the problem. So these little things that we can do to be a little more vigilant, I think, as well.
And that is the very number one
Yeah.
recommendation, just
And
to
it to me, it's the same thinking. Everyone I know wants a tick formula, you know, to snap their fingers and have it all go away. But it's vigilance. It's only vigilance, the scientists tell us so far. We don't have a magic bullet for ticks. And you know, their populations come and go, get, you know, higher and lower and so forth. But there is nothing that has been shown in research to, like, no matter what the companies tell you who want to apply some product to your yard or put traps or whatever, that's going to do the job on a scale, a bigger scale of like a whole neighborhood or anything like that. You know, they're going to be there. And yeah, and so it's like, well, then you know what? It's my responsibility, especially as a gardener, to be vigilant about my own self-care, right? Each time I go out and come back in, and to have a protocol and to be conscious of it, because I need to protect myself. Because I can't, again, snap my fingers or pay someone an amount of money to make it all go away, the danger go away. So.
And it's definitely understandable that in some areas of the world and some regions, it's a bigger concern than in others and a bigger risk. And but for example, where I live, it's a very low risk of actually contracting something. And so,
You mean
from
from mosquitoes?
mosquitoes. And so that idea of a certain tolerance level too. I mean, no one wants to be bitten, but like you're saying, you can apply repellents too, and you can wear long
And
sleeves.
again, if you want to dine outside, put a fan, and you don't have a screen room or something like that, you know, to use
The
a fan.
fan is great because mosquitoes can't
Right.
fly in the wind.
Right, exactly. So that can be a really good. And it doesn't have to be on high either. It can be, or a couple of little small ones. It makes a huge difference.
And you can be outside, like rather than being outside an hour before and after sunset, or when they're most active, you can be outside at different times when possible. There's different things that you can do if you can't do it all. There's certain things that you can try.
So in the last, you know, 2, 3 minutes, I just want to ask, let's talk about something happy. What's exciting going on in your wild world down there, in your own habitat in your Maryland garden? Anything, any projects underway, or anything you're particularly focused on this spring?
Well, I'm getting ready for some tours,
Oh boy.
and there is I usually cannot see who's nesting. I can kind of tell where they're nesting by their activity, but I hate to disturb and look too closely sometimes because I'm afraid I'm going to freak out the birds. But
I know.
right now there is a cardinal couple nesting in the coral honeysuckle that's growing up the staghorn sumac that's right outside my slider in my office. And it's so sweet because I can hear them calling to each other, and I can see her situating herself all day long. And It has made me wonder, do they like this particular place a lot because the flowers look so much like her? I mean, her head has a little, has the little red down the back that looks just like a, and all the petals are like interwoven on the outside of the net. I mean, all the flowers, it's like, I don't know if they picked them or they fell in, but they're all on the outside of her nest. So it's so sweet.
Well, I have an irate female robin who I had a garden tour on Saturday, and 300 and something people came, and the robin was right on the back porch, actually in a coral honeysuckle as well, nesting. And she was very angry that I allowed visitors in the property at this time. Margaret, I filed a complaint, Margaret, she says. So, well, I'm always really glad to speak to you. And again, I was really glad to see your article in American Gardener.
Thank
And
you.
thanks for bringing up this important topic. And we'll do with the transcript of the show over on a way to garden. .com. We'll do a giveaway of your wildscape book, and I hope I'll talk to you again sooner than later. Let's not let so long go by.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you covering this topic too, Margaret.
Well,
Thank you.
and ditto. Thank you for bringing it to the surface. Bye
Yeah,
bye.
bye-bye.
And don't miss an episode. I hope I'll speak to all of you again soon. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And you can subscribe free to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.